There was an instant response and I felt an answering warmth of affection which seemed to contain happiness, friendship and willingness, and I knew it was the reciprocation of thoughts as our auras were mingling. I saw my chance to leave through a lane in the assembly, but my friend the horse started to move before I could give any outward indication that I wished to go forward, as by that same interchange of thought it knew my desires. And so it was, through a clearing onto a long path through the bright countryside, this lovely animal anticipated my every wish, and the reins were simply provided for my earthly habit of thought, as even when loosely held, they are reassuring. I sensed that this horse had been long in spirit and was used to the love and kindness in the thoughts of the people of this plain. To describe a ride on a spirit horse seems to call for some swift, Pegasus-like ride, but it was not so. Although there is no fatigue in spirit, we were on holiday, and we had all time in this timeless state. We simply walked, and I did not wish for anything better. Sometimes I would be attracted by the beauty of a scene and, my desire being known, the horse would halt and give a half turn so that I could dwell on it and then on again. We seemed to be of one mind. The happiness this apparently simple ride gave me is hard to describe. Every time my thoughts strayed to the horse, there would be an answering thought which was an utter love for humans. I could not detect the slightest trace of subjection by mastery. Considering the lives of some horses on earth and their treatment which I have seen in different countries, perhaps part of my pleasure was in knowing that such simple bliss could be reached by an animal and that this was another of God's perfect laws. We went a considerable distance, turned and meandered pleasantly back. Nearing the end of the ride, I began to have that drowsiness that happens to me when being on a high vibration, and drifted back to the physical body. This was a single excursion to one plane only and happened at night. Although none of my spirit travels affected my rest at night, this experience refreshed me bodily as if I had been on a holiday. Next headline, Chapter 5, Various Experiences. Subheadline is, Natural and Spiritual Protection. At first the projections were from my bed at night, and later also on Sunday afternoons from an armchair upstairs. After this I found it possible to project whenever I had the time and ease. I simply used to ask and wait, but it did not always happen and I had plenty of blank dates. On one occasion when nothing happened I got impatient and tried to will myself out of the body but without success, and I told nobody. Later, I was with a medium friend who suddenly looked concerned and asked me if I had tried to project on my own. When I admitted it I was sternly told never to try it, your guides know the best time. When I have projected there always seems to be a spirit helper left to watch over my physical body, who obviously knows what goes on in my home, as I have never been caught out. Should I be wanted for any reason, I would always be comfortably brought back and then I would hear the footsteps of somebody in my home coming up to call me. There are other protections. The spirit body cannot be injured, but any discomfort in the physical body is communicated through the connecting astral cord and is registered in the same place on the spirit body. I have been brought back because the physical body was coughing, snoring or had numbness or cramp. A loud noise will also cause a return. There always seems to exist a natural protection for the inert physical body, but curious effects can sometimes be observed. Once I was walking along a street in spirit and began to emit strong, regular snores. It was very strange, but I could not stop it and became annoyed. This feeling brought me back to the body, the spirit law of the lower vibration, and I found myself lying on my back and snoring heartily through the effects of a cold. One night in bed, I had projected to a rest home or hospital on the other side where I knew my wife was helping. And as I crossed a corridor to her room I gave a choking cough which at once whipped me back. My physical body was still coughing when I re-entered it. On another occasion I had left a factory in spirit, and was walking outside, when my legs suddenly crossed and locked. I had to bend down and force them apart. This happened several times, which caused the usual annoyance and the automatic return to the body. I had projected from an armchair and my legs were crossed, and had become numb. Sometimes I am aware what is wrong with my physical body left behind on Earth. I was once talking to a soldier in spirit in an astral state. I knew him and sensed that he did not realize his true condition. As it is not always helpful to tell a person outright that he is dead, I was trying to make him recall his last place on Earth. Suddenly, while I was talking, a painful ache came in my right arm and I knew that my physical body was pressing on the arm in bed. I tried to ignore it and went on speaking, but he suddenly said, "Oh, you are all fuzzy." Apparently my spirit body had become indistinct to him. The ache in my arm increased and a little girl appeared at my side. I put a hand on her shoulder, concentrated on the physical and returned. I sat up in bed and rubbed my right arm until it was normal and tried to compose myself to return to spirit land. The exertion had, however, increased my breathing and blood flow and made any further traveling impossible. The little girl who appeared at my side seemed to be the same one who took me round the rest home on my second projection. On this occasion I saw a woman with a fuzzy looking spirit body, and it is interesting to note that I probably resembled her. I have said that the spirit body cannot be injured. I did not experiment in this direction, but a demonstration was arranged by my spirit helpers. I was taken to a bright place and was talking to a group of young men whose ages appeared to be between 23 and 25, the age usually assumed by those who have progressed in spirit. Their appearance is very fine and it is always a pleasure to be with them, as the emanation of their auras has a pleasant effect on my spirit body. Suddenly one of them plunged a knife into my hand. For the moment I was startled, then I laughed as there was no pain. One of the smiling group said, "Look at your hand." There was a hole in the palm, and it was slowly closing through no volition on my part. Next headline, "The Spirit Body, an Hypothesis." I remember reading of a spirit guide explaining to a circle that spirit is like electricity, only more subtle. This I think is very apt and should be borne in mind. Often when arriving on a plane there seems to be, electrically speaking, a difference of potential between my astral body and the locality, then upon touching an object I become more in phase with that state and full awareness occurs, with a feeling of greater power and interest. For ages it has been known by those who study this subject that we have a physical body and a spirit body, and the latter might thus be conceived as consisting of electrical forces, arranged in a pattern. Every thought might be likened to an electrical impulse. Since the advent of sensitive electronic apparatus, the electrical changes connected with thought impulses have been recorded. We may think of every thought impulse as having a specific wavelength or a specific rate of vibration connected therewith, like waves in radio. All through an individual's life the electrical impulse of every thought is impressed on and held by the spirit body, just as a tape recorder retains an impression of electrical impulses. Every thought has a specific rate of vibration. I believe good thoughts have a high rate, the not so good a lower rate. These combined vibrations have an average or mean value. Upon entry into spirit life, a person will naturally and automatically gravitate to his state in spirit, which corresponds to his acts and thoughts throughout life as reproduced by the personal tape record. This automatic attraction to the appropriate spirit surroundings represents another of the perfect spirit laws. It is also the answer to those who jokingly say that it would need an unbelievable amount of celestial bookkeeping to register every intention, wish, thought and act of everybody, to be brought up to future judgment. The fact is that everybody is, knowingly or unknowingly, his or her own accountant. The good and bad acts represented by the higher and lower vibrations oscillating around the mean value also fix the upper and lower limits of the particular sphere in the spirit world to which the newcomer is attracted. His scope is thus determined and he cannot see into higher spheres any more than the average person on earth can look into the spirit world. Thus we have one spirit saying, "We eat as we did on earth," and another, "We do not need food." I have seen that both statements, though seemingly mutually conflicting, are true, but they belong to different spheres. The lower and intermediate states appear to be vast zones of vibrations, split up like the radio wave bands into the tendencies, habits, or desires of the inhabitants, and are as numerous as only the infinite variety of minds can be. These different states are in varying degrees of brightness, from dull or lower to the higher and brighter vibrations, the latter resembling a bright sunny day on Earth. No accidents. After I had been to the next planes of existence a good many times, I thought it odd that I had never witnessed or experienced an accident of any kind. When the spirit body is of, or near the same wavelength of a plane, all things seem solid, and can be felt or handled, yet I have never accidentally knocked against an object or person at any time. I could not experiment in this direction as mine would interfere and a planned accident would not be accidental. My teachers solved this problem for me by a carefully timed incident, as will be seen by the sequence of events that led up to it. I had been projected to a hospital in spirit, where I knew my wife was working, but as I reached the entrance, the door was closed and my invisible guide said, "The hospital is not open yet." I felt impatient, as I am always aware of the limited time of a projection, and time was growing short. I walked round the hospital gardens which had banks of beautiful flowers and was admiring a pretty white bridge over a stream when my guide said, "The hospital is open now." Quickly I ran to the hospital, through the entrance and up some stairs, and as I turned a corner I ran headlong into a group of people coming down. There was no shock or collision. I felt as if I had hit a soft cushion of air, and was diverted around the group. The group continued on, but I stopped in surprise. I had in an instant contacted the minds of the group. They were hospital workers going off duty, but I could not understand this strange happening. My teacher then impressed upon me, as far as I was able to understand, that the spirit body is electrical, and is surrounded by a zone or field, like a magnetic field, which automatically repels. This repulsion is neutralized when the mind desires to touch or grasp. In this sort of unexpected way, I was taught quite a few things which I would not have learned otherwise. Next headline, psychometry in spirit. I cannot do psychometry in the physical body, but it is automatic and easy when I am in the sensitive spirit body. Projected from bed, I found myself walking on a road entering a small country town. There were other people walking in the same direction, and I sensed the feeling, in commemoration. Presently, several mounted men passed, hauling gun carriages. I looked behind and the last one, with a mischievous smile on his face, reined his horses so close to me that I had to scramble up a bank to get out of his way, and then they stopped. I walked along the bank to have a word with this reckless rider, but when I came up to him, I was completely disarmed by his most friendly and charming smile. I was then surprised to see that he was wearing a helmet of Cromwell's time, but instead of the usual breastplate generally shown in pictures of the period, he had a jacket with thick leather flaps attached to it. Then I contacted his aura. It was a shock to me. His personality was the strongest I have ever met in all my spirit experiences. He was a hardened campaigner without the slightest fear, and I sensed his numerous sorties and battles, all waged with the most cheerful recklessness, and as if they had only just happened. It was rather overpowering, and I walked round to inspect the gun carriage, as I was curious to see how it compared with ours of the First World War. It was crude and simple with heavy iron fittings, and when I touched one of the wheels, I seemed to witness the whole of the Civil War, 1642. Battles, skirmishes, lootings, burning farmhouses, misery, triumphs, the heat of the summer and the slush and cold of winter, my sensitive spirit body was automatically psychometrizing this etheric relic of a past war. I felt sick and depleted, and left to join some people entering a house which overlooked the market square, where the expected commemoration was to take place. I waited at the window but was not interested owing to the effect of psychometry and wished to return to the body. I was returned, became physically conscious, saw the symbol of astral projection on the ceiling, and then mentally asked, why all this? The reply was, what is the date? I turned on the light. It was 2 a.m. and the new day was 11th November, the day we commemorate the signing of the armistice of the First World War. I wish I had spoken to this man to hear his style of speech. Also, I was curious about the leather flaps, but later I found a reference to these in the local library. They were often worn by the lower ranks as a protection from sword cuts, etc. I was once projected to a dockside in spirit, and was interested in a refrigerator ship there. As I had never been over one of these, I decided to inspect it and walked onto the deck. After a few paces, my spirit body had the most unpleasant feeling, and a few more paces produced a sense of unspeakable terror and helplessness. I simply ran off the ship and wanted to get away from it. A young couple nearby were about to leave in a small yacht and I joined them. Sitting in the boat, I wondered what caused this fright and was told that the ship was impregnated with the terror emanating from the bodies of the slaughtered animals it had carried. I do not think that these animals were slaughtered in the quick and humane manner we are led to believe. This etheric counterpart of an earthly ship held its impressions just like the gun carriage I contacted and had the same effect on my spirit body. This psychometry can be very unpleasant, as it seems to affect the whole body. Next headline, some surprises. Some may think that uncanny things happen in the next world. They do, but they are rather different from what is expected. I had been taken to a children's creche or nursery, a very bright place, the corridors and rooms being all in white. I was watching some small children in one of the rooms when through the open door bounded a dog. It was one of those big stuffed rag dogs with button eyes and comical bent feet that children love to play with, but I was astonished when I saw that the thing was moving like a real dog. My earthly mind had at least expected some stiff mechanical or clockwork movement, but every action had the perfect mannerisms of a live animal. It was something that could never be seen on Earth, and the suddenness gave me a most uncanny feeling which I cannot describe. Presently an older girl, who appeared to be in charge of the little ones, saw the dog and said, Johnny, what are you doing here? Go back to your room, and Johnny obediently turned and went out through the door. I sensed that this toy was animated by an advanced spirit in charge of the place. Earthly interests are often retained by the spirit mind for a long time. Many years ago I had a mandolin, and was slow in memorizing some of the pieces I used to play, which meant much concentration on the music and searching for the frets on the instrument. In a house in spirit I saw a mandolin with its plectrum, picked it up and played Beethoven's Minuet in G without a mistake, remembering every note and its position. The subtle electrical spirit mind was unhampered by the physical body. On one occasion my wife took me to a concert on the other side. There was the usual stage or platform, and one of the performers was a singer, a man. I liked his voice but I thought his gestures were rather overdone. As I thought this he glanced quickly in my direction and modified his movements. Towards the end of the song, however, he began to use his arms again very freely and in the grand finale I thought he looked silly. After he had finished, he walked to the front of the stage and stared at me with a look of annoyance. Much to my relief, we got up and left the hall, but in a rather thoughtful mood, and outside I suddenly realized that the singer had received all my thoughts. I am afraid that earthly habits like this must take some time to correct. Many things seem to emphasize the earth-like qualities of some of the spheres. I once saw the empty hulk of an old wooden ship moored to the bank of what appeared to be an estuary. A strange noise came from the ship now and again, and I went on board to investigate. I found that there was a slight swell on the water which sometimes caused the rudder to move with a harsh grinding sound. How very much like Earth, I thought. Once, when I was projected to a room in a museum, I was deposited on a chair and, as I became conscious and began to notice the surroundings, a man approached, evidently surprised by my sudden appearance and unformed state. He was curious and wanted to touch me, but when he was about an arm's length away, he suddenly jumped back as if he had received an electric shock. He tried it several times and began to look like a cat round a hedgehog. Now fully conscious, I stood up and said, "You need healing," and grasped his hands. He immediately sank to the floor as if in a faint. I do not know why I did this and may have been prompted by my spirit helper and, although surprised, I was not perturbed and left him comfortably sleeping, knowing he would soon recover. I believe this was the effect of the difference of potential mentioned earlier. Next headline, strange influences. On a dull day in winter, I had projected from an armchair beside the fire and had been taken to my house in spirit. Soon after I arrived, the room began to appear alternately light and dark, like the effect of a cinema projector running too slowly. It had a very disagreeable effect on me and seemed like an earthly headache, but with a quicker drumming and intensity. It was not to be endured and I was drawn back to the body. The headache continued until I had regained full physical consciousness. I found that it was caused by a gaseous piece of coal flickering on a hitherto dull fire. The incident interested me considerably because in this case my physical body had no discomfort, and the cause seemed trivial. I believe that the flickering light of the coal had some effect on the physical body, or even directly on the astral cord, causing a quickly alternating wavelength or vibration, which would affect only the spirit body. There is a cataleptic state on returning to the physical body, but this is realized only if one tries to move at once. On returning from my earlier projections, I was quite content to lie and watch the symbol on the ceiling of the bedroom. Then one night I projected while lying on my side. When I returned, I at once tried to roll over on my back, a very simple operation, but I was absolutely powerless and frightened. However, in a few seconds, which in my fright seemed ages, full power returned. Anyway, it was an instructive experience and it made me fully realize that I and my physical body are two different parts. I had been away, and on my return I must first permeate my brain, in order to give my orders through my nerves as to what muscles I wished to use for this physical condition. Later, when I became experienced, I thought it fun on returning to the armchair to try quickly to raise an arm which appeared to be as lifeless as a piece of wood until I got back into it. On return, the life force seems to pour back into the physical body. First to the mentality and eyes, then to the body and the extremities. A day projection seems to give rest and refreshment and is not like an afternoon nap, when one is apartment to get up yawning and stretching. Next headline, levitation. There were many experiments I wanted to make in order to study the spirit world, but one's purposes are difficult to remember when out of the body. I have tried levitation or lifting the spirit body by willpower. This appears to be a case of different states, different powers. In a lower sphere, a dull astral town, I could rise only as high as the rooftops by a great effort of will, but could not hold it and sank again. In another sphere, which was as brilliant as a tropical noon, my spirit body had the feeling of lightness and strength and I could easily land on the top of a high, white building. I was once tested in this respect, but it was no disconcerting examination. I was on a bright plane with a group of smiling friends who gently suggested that I might ride a child's sailing boat that had fallen on its side in the middle of a pond. I found it quite easy to hover over the water and then reach down to do this. Next, it was suggested that I should go to a white building some distance away and return without stopping. This also I found was easy. I traveled in a delightful glide in a forward-leaning attitude, and as, of course, it is done by thought, everything happened as I wished. I made an easy turn at the building and then returned to the group, to be greeted by smiles and congratulations. I ought to have looked, if I may say so, rather graceful, if not angelic. It may be some consolation to those who study spiritual truths and wish to learn, to know that often a so-called dream is a spirit experience, and although only a hazy recollection is brought back to the physical mind, the memory of it is fully retained by the spirit mind. This is one of the methods used by the spirit teachers to teach those on earth, and I know that the knowledge is retained because I have had many of these dream experiences, and then, when later projected, I have remembered them and have been somewhat prepared. My account of levitation in spirit may sound rather simple, but I had already experienced it in the dream state and knew something of the mental effort required. I should imagine that a newcomer to spirit life, who did not know of the possibilities, might have some difficulties in levitating, and the chief obstacle would be doubt, so it is better to know of these things. I had a startling lesson in this direction once, and it was a throw him in to see if he can swim kind of test. I had been projected and had lost consciousness, and on regaining it, the first thing I saw was some swiftly moving grass beneath me. I was in a forward-leaning position and for the moment thought that I had been tossed from a horse, and swooped still closer to the grass. Lifting my face upwards in an effort to miss the grass, I rose again. This natural thought happened to be the right one, the desire to avoid, and I found that I was crossing a large grassy plain. In the distance I could see a village on a hill and sensed that this was my destination. Levitation and effortless flight are a delight and quite a novelty at first, but I believe that they are only used for speed and to cover distances, because in spirit, walking is also effortless and a pleasure. Besides, it would be a habitual way of seeing the countryside and its attractions. Also, usually there would be plenty of time. Next headline, some observations. I had an excursion to an intermediate sphere, a seaside resort, where spirits were regaining strength and becoming acclimatized. I was looking into the buildings near the beach, and in one there was a band and people were dancing. I went through an adjoining door and found myself in a dressing room where women were preparing for a bathe in the sea. I did a quick right about turn and went out through the door again, hoping that I hadn't been noticed. For the benefit of psychic science, I would like to have it noted that the spirit face does not blush, but the spirit can feel very silly. Of course, some spirits could change into bathing attire by thought. Some would not want to change at all, and others would have to go through the earthly way of changing, according to their mental development. I have been taken to several drinking places in spirit, and I do not think that I was visible to the people there. They seem to be habitual meeting places of like-minded people, and the drinks did not appear to have any enlivening or intoxicating effect. One place I visited was an old tavern on the sea front, which still seemed to have the appearance of the early 18th century. The proprietor was a large, angular-looking individual with a suntanned face and buckled shoes who looked like an ex-buccaneer basking in respectable retirement. Hanging on the wall were some flat miniature wooden barrels with leather slings, and I saw one customer leave with one hanging from his shoulder like a military water bottle. I think these were used instead of the leather bottles. I had an example of telepathy during normal, waking consciousness. One afternoon in my shop on Earth, I suddenly had the impression that my sister-in-law would be visiting us. A weekday call would be unusual, but as I had received the impression of her personality so strongly, I made a note of the time. Half an hour later, my sister-in-law walked into the shop, and her first words were, "Did you get anything?" She told me that before leaving her house, she visualized herself as standing in front of me and saying that she would be calling, and her time coincided with mine. The fact that this subtle and uninterrupted message reached the right person among the 10 million other people of Greater London would be considered by many as either a myth or as miraculous. It is neither. Telepathy is the projection of thought on the personal wavelength which conjoins with the personality thought of. How the personal wavelength is formed and why it is unique and individual, I have tried to explain on an earlier page. Next headline, power of thought. I was once on the outskirts of a town in spirit and was watching some Australians playing cricket. Although they were in their shirt sleeves, I sensed that they were soldiers of the First World War, called Australian Light Horse, and still wearing their riding breeches. Knowing that objects could be directed by thought, I had the mischievous idea of directing the ball round the player's bat. I then thought it would not be right to interfere, so I walked into the town looking for some object to use. I found an apple in the street and saw nearby a tall lamp standard with metal scroll work at the top. I tossed the apple up and directed it to a certain spot on the scroll work. It went straight to my chosen spot, but just before it touched it, it turned aside and went to another spot. I was surprised.